It's that time of year again. It's the time of the year where we have to make a list about what is going to be the best of 2019, because your Geek History Lesson is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Baby New Year Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or solar year from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour. And if you are new to the podcast, welcome. We're so happy to have you. Please tell a friend. We do this every year, usually at the beginning of the next year, but this year at the end of this year. So we're trying to keep you on your toes after 5 years of broadcasting.
That's right. We're hoping that you're going to enter New Year's Eve with our definite lists of everything that is in pop culture and all the various items. Just to let you know, our different categories are comics, movies, television, books, prose books, actually, podcasts, and then our favorite episode of our own podcast, which actually is a fun suggestion given to us by a listener. So we hope everybody out there, you hope you had a good holiday, whatever you celebrated. Hope you watched lots of television, like The Crown. That's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great, great viewing experience. I don't think I made it on my list. Did it make it on your list?
You'll have to see.
You mean I'll have to listen?
Well, you can see me.
Oh, that's true. Nobody else can, though.
Podcasting, famously a visual medium.
Speaking of things that are visual mediums, though, we want to talk a little bit about our comic, Jupiter Jet. Now, don't run away. I know a lot of you guys fast forward doing some of these advertisements, but I want to say to you right now, don't fast forward, because, fun fact, here's the announcement. Jupiter Jet Volume 2 is finally coming. That's right. Our comic that was released in 2017, we are doing a brand new volume of it, and it's going to be coming to Kickstarter in late January 2020. And if you are excited about our all-ages jetpack girl, Jackie Johnson, who flies through the sky, you can see two pages of the comic book of Jupiter Jet Volume 2 right now on my newsletter at jasoninman.com. You can go there. There's a little widget. And you get the exact date for when the Kickstarter is going to launch. So we're really excited about Volume 2. There's a new villain. There's a new supporting character. And there's some fun stuff in it. There's some fun Western stuff in it. Yeah, Ashley?
Yeah. I'm hoping to see more cameos than ever before.
From who?
From our supporters.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite things.
Okay.
I love seeing the cameos.
All right. So don't forget to go over there and check that out. There you go. Any other side business stuff, Ashley, we need to go through before we get to the categories? Now, again, this is not the objective best. These are our personal favorites.
No, just that.
Just that what?
Just this is our personal list. So this is not a definitive list. They're our opinions, so they're not wrong.
That's correct. Okay. Let's start off, Ashley. Let's go comics.
Yeah, so if I can't say Science, the Elements of Dark Energy, which is our graphic novel that came out this year, because that would be self-serving and silly, I definitely feel like there is only one answer for this, in my opinion, and it is House of X / Powers of X, the two-part dovetailing, kind of the same intro to the new ongoing X-Men title by Jonathan Hickman. And it was something that I only started to read because Jason encouraged me to read it, and he really, really enjoyed it. And him, Jonathan Hickman, working with Pepe Larraz and R.B. Silva, really gave the X-Men the swift kick in the pants that they needed, because in my opinion, X-Men's been a mess since about Battle of the Atom. And X-Men is one of my favorite properties, and I found this to be so magical, so inventive, so beautiful and so compelling. It's everything that I want an X-Men comic to be, and yet somehow elevates the story and the form. And Jason, I don't know what your choice is, but I know this had to be in contention, so I'd love it if you would join me.
Is that all you have to say about the comic?
Well, I'm giving you an opportunity to jump in, too. If you want, because I know you really like this book as well.
Oh, okay. I was like, please go on. More. I didn't want you to stop. My choice is exactly the same. House of X and Powers of X. There's no other choice here. Of course, this is the Jonathan Hickman kind of reboot, sort of, even though it's not really a reboot, because it's all about Charles Xavier's new master plan for mutant kind, and one that will bring mutants out of the shadows and in light. Now, the great thing about this book, guys, I know a lot of people, I've seen this online. I've seen a lot of people be like, the hype's too big. I don't want to read it. And I think the hype is perfect. I bought this, the first issue that came out, which I believe was House of X number one. It was the very first one. I bought it because I wanted to see what Jonathan Hickman was going to do with it. And I will say the idea of making Krakoa the mutant nation, having mutants have their own sovereign nation, is so different and new. And it's exactly what the X-Men were missing, because the X-Men are about the future of humanity, futurism in all parts. So to me, to fully embrace that kind of legacy, that theme of X-Men, really, I think, showed what the X-Men were missing for a very, very long time. X-Men is very much a series that should always look for the future. Now, the other person, you mentioned Pepe Larraz and R.B. Silva, who, you know, by the way, are not big names before this book, but I think now they should be superstars because they were amazing. But the one person, Ashley, that I think doesn't get enough credit is Tom Mueller, who is the designer of all of these books. He designed all the new logos, the new X logo. He designed with Hickman all those pages that you see in House of X. All the graphics were also co-designed by Tom Mueller. And it looks amazing. These data pages, I think, are so amazing. And they give you like sort of a documentary view into the status quo. Like there are timelines, there are all kinds of things. It makes it a more added experience. It really reminded me kind of Watchmen, which I thought was great.
Oh, interesting. I also think that this book takes really great advantage of the cast of characters that Hickman has chosen to populate the books with. House of X is the one that reflects more of our familiar characters, Powers of X. He is creating from classic tropes a bunch of new characters who I thought were really incredible. Like, I really, really love Rasputin. I really, really love Cardinal. Please, Marvel, make action figures of them. I want them so bad. But I think this is one of the first times that I think Nightcrawler has been used to great effect. I think
Should describe that page that you love.
I think the take on Emma Frost is incredibly intelligent, because I don't like Emma Frost, and this made me understand her utility, and I thought it was a very clever way to use her, and they put her in clothes. What a concept! And she was still beautiful and powerful. But there is a scene in House of X. I apologize. I don't know what the issue is. I don't have it open in front of me.
They're the same thing. Just, it's fine. From this point forward, just let's just say House of X, then it means all of it.
I just meant I don't know if it's issue one or two or three or four or five or six.
But you're certain it happens in House of X.
Yes, it is, because it's sort of the present day timeline. And they are modern day mutants, which is kind of the uncanny lineup, is trying to infiltrate a space station. And they have Nightcrawler bamfing, because, you know, he's doing some recon. And they place him in the negative space in between the panels. And he's so beautifully drawn. And it's such a clever way to show that he lives in this liminal space when he's using his powers. It's so intelligent. It's something that I've never seen before. And I think Nightcrawler should be equal parts very beautiful and very scary, because, you know, he's described as being an elf or very elf-like or a demon. And I think for me, both Larraz and Silva really capture that balance when they're drawing Nightcrawler or sort of a Nightcrawler adjacent character like Cardinal. Since Todd Nuck was drawing the solo series, they are my favorite artists to take on Nightcrawler. And if you're longtime listeners, you know that he is my favorite character. So I just remember being like swept away and zooming in closer and closer and closer, because I thought he was so stunning. And Jason, I don't know if you were going to talk about this, but I know you're a big Summers family, and they also feature pretty heavily in this saga.
Well, Scott does. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Summers family is more a bigger part of the ongoing X-Men title, which I think, you know, it's a little unfair to like group it in. But it's weird, because I think part of the success of Powers of X and House of X is that it really does make the X-Men seem like a world. Because when you think about it, like, what's the biggest complaint the X-Men have had for like the last, I don't know, 20 years since Claremont? That there are too many characters. And I kind of feel that this is the first X-Men story, and probably since Grant Morrison's run, that makes it feel like a world. Yes, there are thousands of mutants, and they all kind of know each other. I mean, I actually thought the scene, slight spoilers for this, there's a scene where Apocalypse and Charles Xavier break bread, and they become sort of allies, and you're like, what am I reading here? Like, what is this?
But and Mr. Sinister kind of has a moment like that.
There's a great Mr. Sinister issue in this run. You know, I would say the reason why House of X and Powers of X quickly jumped to the top of my list is that it is so unexpected. And I think it should go to say that, like, you know what? This is proof positive that we shouldn't fear all reboots or retcons or what. Because again, like, I keep calling this a reboot, but it's really not a reboot. It's just a brand new writer.
It sort of is, though, you know?
Yeah.
It sort of is. Because it is great. Undoing something.
I mean, it's also the reason why we're not explaining a lot of it is because, like, it is so dense that, like,
it's hard to talk about it and not spoil it.
It's hard not to just, yeah, give away the twist.
But Jason also mentioned when he was talking about it that X-Men should be forward thinking. And there is a reveal that leads into the X-Men series about a few of these characters and their relationships that I thought was very forward thinking and a really intelligent use of what the X-Men can represent. And I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I think it's really great.
It was cool.
I mean, I think we I think we've put it to bed.
Do you have any also rans or honorable mentions that you want to share?
Yes,
out?
I do. I just really quickly want to tell everybody, like we do every year, certain categories we will have in the GHL recommended reading. Of course, at geekhearslesson.com/recommended reading. Won't be every category, but, you know, comics will definitely be there. So we'll have a link to this. They have an amazing, I own it, the amazing
Beautiful.
House of X, Powers of X
really,
hardcover.
Man, you want to see how to put together a collected edition. Mm-hmm. The way that book is laid out,
it's
if
great.
You are like a nerd for that kind of thing, mm-hmm. really well-designed collection.
Yes, I do. I actually have honorable mentions, I think, for almost all my categories.
So do I.
So, Ashley, what were your almost made it to your lists?
So the two things that were published this year that almost made it to my list were Immortal Hulk, which I talked about a lot in our Hulk episode, just because it kind of gave me the same sort of feels that House of X, Powers of X gave me.
Like a reinvention kind of thing?
Yeah. Like
it's a great book.
It took this character and gave it a really smart twist. It was very thoughtful and really showed how to use them to their best utility. And then DC Kids put out a really great book called Diana, Princess of the Amazons.
Funny fact, I think it just came out this week.
It's pretty recent.
Yeah.
It's so cute. It's so charming. I've wavered a little bit on the new line of DC Kids books, but for me, this really exemplifies
really good.
What is special about that line. And then I read a book this year that actually came out a couple years ago called Claws. It is Grant Morrison's take on... and Dan Morris' take on the Santa Claus mythos. And I just thought it was really cool and really underappreciated, and I would like people to go read it. So how about you? What almost made your list?
Well, the things that almost made my list, I think, are Far Sector. Mm-hmm. That is the new Young Animal Green Lantern title. Had two issues come out this year. It's great. Deceased mm-hmm. is amazing. The Tom Taylor, like DC Zombies. Ed Brubaker's Criminal was killer this year.
Yeah, you got into that this year.
It was really good. It's probably the best it's ever been. And then I just recently reread this. It's a book by a newer publisher, Sentient by TKO Studios, was amazing, written by the great Jeff Lemire.
I also wanted to give some quick shout outs to some books that friends of ours worked on that came out this year that were really cool, including The Only Living Girl, Trios, Kill Switch, Darby, Canto, Dear Justice League. Dear Justice League is so good, guys. Deceased, They Call Us Enemy, and Jimmy Olsen. Those are all really good books that we know cool people who worked
Superman's on. Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen.
Sorry.
I got that full title in there.
Sorry, Steve.
Okay, let's move on into movies.
Yes.
I don't know about you, Ashley, but for me, this was the most difficult category.
It was for me, too. Jason and I have had many versions of this discussion in the last couple of weeks because we've been to a lot of holiday parties. Very, very blessed to be invited. But I thought that 2019 was an interesting year for movies because I saw a lot of really cool things that the more time I spent thinking about or reading about, I came to enjoy more. I saw a lot of things that were creative, big swings, but imperfectly executed. But I would rather see things like that than the same old, same old. But for this category, in the past, I've always had a very strong feeling, and I didn't have a strong feeling. I spent a lot of time thinking about this category this year. So, yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say about movies in 2019?
I'm very curious about what your choice is then.
I think my choice is a pretty obvious choice. And it's a movie that I did not get to see in theaters and I saw later. And my immediate reaction was, I don't know if I like this, but I've really come around on it. And that is Midsommar, starring Florence Pugh, written and directed by Ari Aster. Following the death of Danny's parents, she and her boyfriend travel to Sweden to visit their friend's rural hometown for its fabled Midsummer Festival. But what begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. it has a lot of things in it that I really like. It has pagan imagery. It has really beautiful naturescapes. It has a feminist perspective. And it's scary without being gory. I really have come to appreciate horror that comes from a more psychological perspective. I think we're in a golden age of horror right now, kind of like the 80s must have felt when slashers coming into vogue.
Can I ask you a weird question? Like, what do you think started that? Like, is there a movie that you think kicked that off? Was it Get Out?
I think Get Out is the easy answer.
Because I would argue maybe Hereditary kicked it off.
Hereditary, I think, is also an easy answer. I think there were probably cooler, weirder indie things that that led up to this. I'm not deep in the horror
landscape. And I don't mean to sideline your
choice
either.
No, that's okay. Just because sometimes it gets too much for me and I can't take it. But yeah, probably.
But I agree with you. We are in a golden age of horror right now, I think.
And Get Out. And some of my also-rans also kind of fall into this category. But Ari Aster, in this interview, which actually you told me about, said that he looked at this movie for Danny, Florence Pugh's lead character, that for her, this is a tragedy that turns into a wish fulfillment story. Whereas for the rest of the largely male cast members, it's a pagan cult horror movie. And I thought that was really an interesting way to unpack it. And this movie is like, it's weird and it's challenging and it's too long. But it's the thing that's brought me the most delight, and the more I reflect on it. I share a lot of cool art inspired by it on my Instagram. So because it's the thing that stuck with me the most, that's why I wanted to feature it. But do I think you could cut 25 minutes out of it?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't imagine watching the director's cut, which is a half an hour longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I listened to an interview with him where he talked about it, and he was like, oh, I was very into French New Wave at the time. And you're like, that makes sense. Yeah. But I just I just think there's something kind of delightful about it. And I would like to see more things made in this vein. This feels to me very much like The Witch. And I was like,
I have a weird prediction. I kind of think over the next 3 years, we're going to see a whole bunch of Midsommar copies.
Oh, the way like Wicker Man kind of had the same thing happen
like
in the 70s.
I think we're going to see a bunch of weirdly, vaguely European horror movies where
girls with braids in their hair.
Yeah, or kids. Yeah, kids go to forests somewhere in Europe and weird stuff happens. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I'm not upset by that. So.
No, but I think
but nothing will be as good.
No, nothing will be as good. But I think this movie is going to kick off a bunch of copycats.
I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm thinking back to your original question. What do I think kicked it off? I think it was actually probably James Wan, because he's been making
Insidious,
Insidious, and then the Conjuring movies.
Okay.
For like maybe 5 years before Hereditary. I think he's probably the progenitor of the current trend. Someone who is smarter than us will tweet us and tell us what they think. But Jason, what is your best movie of 2019?
This is a hard one for me. I thought about this a lot, and it's interesting because my choice is not, it's not in a lot of people's top tens. I think it's a movie a lot of people slept on. And it's also a movie that a lot of people ignored because they think, it's a certain type of movie, and it's totally not. My movie can be summed up with one word: Vroom. And that is Ford v. Ferrari. Now, yes, I know it has a terrible name. And yes, I know it should. If you've seen the movie, it should be totally titled 7000 RPM. Mm-hmm. In Europe, they call it Le Mans 66 because
or it should be called The Perfect Lap.
The Perfect Lap. But this, of course, is about the American automotive designer Carroll Shelby, and features British race car driver Ken Miles as they battle corporate interference, the laws of physics, and their own personal demons to build a revolutionary vehicle for the Ford Motor Company, where they plan to compete at the 24 Hours of Le Mans in France in 1966. This was directed by James Mangold, of course, the creator and director of Logan and the new 310 to Yuma. I've heard so many people describe this as a dad movie. They describe this as like, oh, the mediocre white man movie. I've heard this described as like, oh, that's a boring car movie. And yes, I agree with you that that's the way it's advertised. That is not what this movie is at all. This movie is about a man, when you took a Ken Miles, played by Christian Bale, a man who is so uncompromising. He will not compromise. He will not compromise. He will not compromise. And that sort of leads him on this life journey that will take him straight to Le Mans. And then he has faced with the ultimate decision. Does he compromise or does he not? And when you see what he chooses and
And why?
And why?
Because he doesn't do it for himself.
Yes. And again, I have to talk a loosely around this because it's the climax of the movie. And how what happens to him after that, it's like heartbreaking, mm-hmm. especially when you look at this man's life. And I also think that Matt Damon gives a tour de force performance. Did I even say that right?
You did fine.
All right. He gives an amazing performance as Carroll Shelby. And, you know, Matt Damon's somebody that a lot of people have slept on as well.
Matt Damon is so good.
Yeah, he's really
good. I know
good.
He's easy to make friends of because he's Batman's friend. But
when I think about this year, this is the movie that I keep thinking about. And I guess I keep thinking about it because I'm like, I did not expect it mm-hmm. to be this good. I expected it just to be a solid dude movie about a car race. And it's so not that. It is. Mm-hmm. I mean... I also like have to give mad credit that there's no CGI in the car races.
Except removing like
safety harnesses and stuff.
Yeah, things like that.
Vector and camera rigs. Yeah. But they actually shot these cars. Mm-hmm. They shot real cars.
Going
which is
real fast.
By the way, fun fact, I don't know if you know, but in most Hollywood movies now, if you see any kind of car chase, about 75% of the cars you see on the road are fake.
Also, I don't know if listeners, particularly to this podcast, know this, but Jason is really into cars.
Yeah. I like cars a lot.
And so this kind of reflects, I think, a different portion of your interest than maybe people are used to hearing about. And that's cool.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I think my greatest argument for this movie is you, Ashley, because like mm-hmm. I begged you to see this movie with me.
I said, don't make me see the car movie.
and you were not looking forward to it.
Nope.
And then you walked out loving it.
I think this movie's great. I think this is in my also rants list. This is, I think, the most perfect, well executed movie I've seen this year.
But, oh, it's a good, like, it's everybody is at master level.
Yeah. But I also think in a lot of ways, compared to like some of the other things that we're going to talk about that didn't make our list, I think because of that, it feels like less, quote unquote, to use a buzzword,
unique,
edgy.
Yeah.
You know what I
There's
mean?
There's nothing
Whereas,
edgy
like,
about
Midsommar
this movie.
Midsommar feels edgy. Yeah. And it feels cool.
Ford v. Ferrari. Is like the Ford they build in the movie.
Yeah,
it is.
Totally.
It is. Every piece works. Totally. It works well, mm-hmm. but it's not a flashy car.
Also, there's like a bunch of superhero adjacent people in this.
Yeah, I mean John Bernthal as Lee Iacocca.
Yeah.
I will also say this, and I'm trying to think about what. Yeah, you nailed it on the head. Like it's just a solid. Like
it's a well crafted.
It's a well crafted movie.
Everyone's at the top of their game.
And I also will say this movie is 2.5 hours long. I don't think you ever feel the length. Not once.
We saw this and then we saw The Lighthouse not too long after it. Mm-hmm. And The Lighthouse is only like less than 2 hours long.
Yeah.
It feels like it's about four.
The Lighthouse, yeah, feels
and
like
And I like The Lighthouse.
I like
but...
The Lighthouse too. But yeah, The Lighthouse feels like it's 4 hours long. Midsommar feels like it's 4 hours long.
I mean, Midsommar is almost 4 hours.
Ford v. Ferrari, it's like you get to the final race and
There's about one race too long.
Yeah, I agree with you. But there is like... You never feel the length, I feel. Even in the Le Mans is like the main race mm-hmm. of the movie. They're probably at Le Mans for half an hour.
Yeah.
And you never get bored with it.
And you've seen two Le Mans before that, or you've heard about them.
Yes. So to me, it's a very well-paced movie. It's a very excellent movie. Again, it's hard not to talk about without going into all these details, uh-huh. but like... It is just a solid movie that I think everybody slept on, and it will not get any awards.
Because it's not trendy, because it's the dad movie.
Because it's the dad movie. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Just because it's the dad movie doesn't mean that it's bad.
No.
I think it means it's great.
Dads are great.
It was easily my favorite movie of the year. Some of my also-rans, my honorable mentions, this is a movie that I also hear nobody talking about, and it was great. Dolomite is My Name.
Didn't see it.
Is the Netflix movie starring Eddie Murphy about mm-hmm. making Dolomite. If you have any interest in movies or creating things, I beg you to watch Dolomite is My Name, because that movie is about a guy that was told for the entire movie, he could not make his movie. He could not make his movie. And he makes his movie
mm-hmm.
and it works. And it's kind of heartlifting. It's it kind of gives you a warm feeling inside. My other ones are The Farewell. I thought The Farewell was amazing.
I have The Farewell on my list as well.
And also something we recently saw, actually just yesterday, 1917.
I was definitely going to bring up 1917. I think people are sleeping on that as well for the same reason, because people tend to think that war movies are only made for mm-hmm. Old white guys, and that's just not true. I think the double punch this year of They Shall Not Grow Old and 1917.
Oh, yeah, They Shall Not Grow Old.
Yeah, which
so
is the Peter Jackson recolorized documentary.
Was that this year? That was last year.
I thought it was this year.
I could be wrong. I thought it was last year.
Well, you can Google it while I talk a little. I just think, you know, we're 100 years past World War One.
Yes.
And I was pleasantly surprised to see that Hollywood is still
War One
2018. You're right.
World War One is becoming more fashionable.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's kind of been the forgotten war. And you know what? Weirdly, I give Wonder Woman as the kickoff for that one, because you know it's set in World War One.
I also want to say that Jojo Rabbit was great.
Yep.
Ready or Not was great. Jason's brought that up a lot. Another one people slept on. And then I think we all forget that we kind of kicked off this year's great movies with Us.
Yeah, Us was released very
early. Yeah, they dropped the trailer on Christmas last year.
It didn't come around on Valentine's Day as well.
Yeah, February. Yeah. Us, again, not a perfect movie. Definitely not as good as Get Out. But if that's the kind of movie that Jordan Peele can show out in less than 2 years, great. And Winston Duke was really funny in it. So I liked it a lot.
Cool. Let's move on into comic book movies. Now, we added this category a couple years ago because we were getting such a mad influx of comic movies.
Because we both wanted to put Doctor Strange as our number one movie.
But that's not true. But we wanted to put Doctor Strange. We wanted to talk about Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But the actual truth of this year is that there weren't that many comic book movies this year.
No, the actual truth of this year is there's one good comic book movie. I don't have any also-rans on this one.
I do.
Because I don't think any of the other ones were good.
Okay, well then I'm very curious, what is your best comic movie of 2019?
I mean, it has to be Avengers Endgame.
Of course, that's mine too. There's no other choice.
And I'm going to be honest, we can kind of zip over this category because I don't know if we can say anything about it that we haven't already said.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone, at least in terms of our amazing listeners to this podcast, everyone knows about this movie. We're not going to say anything that's going to be
It's the end of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, basically, where the Avengers fight Thanos one more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we actually haven't really talked about this movie on the podcast that much. So let's just, why is it the obvious winner?
Because this movie is catharsis personified. Mm-hmm. All of the tension and all of the love that we have been throwing toward this universe for over a decade now, we get a big release in this movie, to the point where the progenitor of it sacrifices himself for the characters in the movie, but also for us, the audience.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first movie the first franchise that really feels like they are daring to close the book on something. It's a lesson that Star Wars really could have used. And it feels like the end of an era, because this is the first time where we don't know if these characters are coming back, because some of them died and some of their contracts are up. Mm-hmm. And there hasn't been a big push, as there has been in the past, to ensure that contracts are renewed. Marvel Studios is really embracing the moving on point.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Well, they are theoretically, at the time of this recording, that's what the PR seems to be saying. Some of us know about certain things. That's not going to be the case. Mm-hmm. But and for me, it's an interesting point to be in, because it leaves the door open for me personally of, do I need to see more Marvel movies going forward?
I mean, it's like the greatest final episode of a television show that was seen in a movie theater is what it is. But let's also say this. They pulled it off. Like, they did pull this off. Now, do I think this movie is too long? Oh, yeah.
Way too long.
But that end battle is something that
Cap catching the hammer.
Us comic book fans have been dreaming of seeing, because we're going spoiler heavy here, guys. So sorry. I mean, if you haven't seen this movie, I don't know where you've been living.
If you haven't seen it, you don't want to. Which is also fine.
Yeah, because it's also been on Blu-ray for a couple months now too. Yeah. When we get the Avengers Assemble moment.
Yeah, finally.
It is just triumphant. And the Alan Silvestri score. I mean, the Russo brothers pulled it off. Mm-hmm. They really, really did. And Marcus and McFeely, these screenwriters, we can't leave them up. This movie worked. Mm-hmm. And again, this is another one of those movies where, like, from the outside, you're like, there's no way this movie works.
Yeah.
There's no way this movie works. And it works. And it works so well that I think you do have a valid argument. Like, and I kind of agree with you that, does this close the book on the MCU so much so that we don't need to see anything else going forward?
I don't know if I'm not going to see anything else, but I definitely no longer feel the need to see everything.
I agree.
There are two movies that are slated to come out that I'm really excited for, and the ones that I'm not, I don't feel that pressure that I used to feel.
Mm-hmm.
This is also Avengers Endgame kind of does what the original Avengers movie did. It's the first of its type in this genre, which is cool.
Yeah.
So you said you had also rans for this category?
I do.
I wrote, honestly, none.
I I think you cannot talk about 2019 without talking about Joker. That is my honorable mention.
Well, I didn't see it.
Yep. You cannot.
Which is
fine. And looking at the list mm-hmm. of this year, it's the only other one to me
that would be even close.
That is even close. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's anywhere near as good as Avengers mm-hmm. Endgame, but just from a cinematography and even a storytelling perspective, you have to consider it in contention of this, because I think Joker is going to define the next 10 years of comic book movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for good and for bad, the good way is that I think Joker is going to prove to studios, oh, we don't have to be as safe mm-hmm. with these heroes and these villains anymore.
We also don't have to be the MCU.
Yes, exactly.
Having not seen it, the Joker appears to be the antithesis to
yes.
super shiny Disney Marvel.
A singular one-off, mm-hmm. even though they're going to make a sequel to it,
yeah.
but not connected to mm-hmm. any shared universe, because like, that's all it's been for the last 10 years, is people like all these other franchises trying to build shared universes and failing.
Yeah.
Even Star Wars failed at that.
I mean, that's debatable.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well, Star Wars is debatable as well, because they're willy-nilly about what they connect and what they
yeah,
don't.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you're just sometimes it gets very frustrating.
Look, some of us are still here waiting for Jason and Jaina to show up.
That's right. That's right. So Joker is, again, for the good things, is that I think it's going to prove to studios like, oh, we don't have to be safe anymore. The downside is that I think it's going to also give studios a lesson of like, oh, you know what? People want more villains and more violence.
Yeah. And for me personally, again, this is just my opinion, that's not necessarily what I want from every superhero. I think there are superheroes and villains
mm-hmm.
That can definitely use that kind of edge. I think Moon Knight should take that lesson.
Sure. To be honest with you,
but I don't need my Teen Titans.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need Batman.
Well, that's a different issue than this one.
Yeah.
But I mean, to be honest with you, what Joker proved to me is that I would love to see a one-off Punisher movie.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I would love to see that. That one-off Punisher movie. You know, like, you could do a lot of, like, think about it. You could do some MCU movies that don't connect to anything else in the MCU that are just one-off amazing stories like Joker. Because the MCU is all about, we got to connect to the next thing, we got to connect to the next thing. Again, I think you have to talk about Joker, because Joker, whether we like it or not, and again, there's all these arguments about Joker, but you have to judge Joker on the only thing you can judge it on, the movie, the art. Did the art succeed? And to me, I'm sorry, the answer is yes. It really is. That movie succeeds. That movie, I think, tells a compelling story. It's a story I've seen before. That's why it's not my number one.
Mm.
And Joaquin Phoenix is pretty astounding in it. But I understand all the issues that are very problematic around it. And Joker, I think more so than Avengers Endgame, is going to, like I said, it's going to define the next decade of superhero movies.
Mm.
More so than Endgame. I'll put a $1 million on it right now.
Sure.
But yeah, in terms of the other ones, I didn't want to put any of them on my list.
I didn't either. they were just like, I just didn't love them. That's all.
Yep.
They're fine. There's
yeah.
nothing wrong with them. But yeah, when I, after Avengers Endgame, I was like, you know what was the best movie of 2019? Rewatching Spider-Verse. Like.
Well, but see, that's the thing. To me, I think in different ways, Avengers Endgame and Joker raised the bar so much
mm-hmm.
that when those other movies just gave us a normal superhero movie,
yeah.
we were like, this is boring.
Yeah.
This is boring.
Yeah.
Because that's what I felt about the rest of them. I was like, this is boring.
I agree.
So now I'm like, you got to elevate. Like, you've got to get up to that table
mm-hmm.
now. So anyway, speaking of getting up to that table, guys, if you've been liking our movie talk so far, I think you're going to want to check out the Geek History Lesson Extra episode on our Patreon at patreon.com/Jaumin, where we're going to be talking about the best of the decade. So we're going through comics, movies, and television, talking about the best of the decade. So you want to go over there and support this free podcast so you can get more content from us, including Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures was an extra podcast, and also something soon that is coming called Blackest Night Club. Yeah, just $1 a month makes a big difference and keeps this podcast free to you and helps support us. And thank you to our amazing patrons that do that.
Thank you.
Ashley, we're now to television.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is not movies that you watch at the boob tube at home.
Mm-hmm.
What's your best television show of 2019?
For me, it was pretty hard not to pick this because for me, this was the only event television. It was the only thing that was highly anticipated. It was the thing that most people argued about. And it was the thing that I liked a lot. And it's Game of Thrones season 8.
Oh, interesting.
I know it's very divisive.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I didn't find anything surprising in
it. I didn't hate it. I'll just say that. I didn't hate it.
Game of Thrones season 8 for me, I thought was a worthy wrap up to one of the greatest television shows of all time. I'm certain we're going to mention it more in our best of the decade list because it would be foolish not to. It changed.
I think so.
It changed this genre of television. It was, you know, one of the last water cooler shows that we had.
Well, we thought so. Now there's a new one.
Yes, there is. But I don't watch that show, so I can't speak to it.
Well, there's two. I was going to actually say, well, we'll talk about, I was actually say The Mandalorian, I think, became the new water cooler show. But you are correct. No, I think no other show, I would say, with besides maybe The Walking Dead, has defined television this decade than Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And you can't ignore that.
And for me personally, I really liked the way all of the characters that I was invested in turned out. Because let's be honest, we're not all invested in all of the characters.
Nope.
So the characters that I cared about had great show outs. I think it had some of the best performances from single actors. I don't think it's a perfect season of television. I think we really could have done with 12 episodes instead of just longer and a shorter episode order. I think the battles were great. I think it did new things on the show. And I think if you're one of those people who's trying to backward engineer that you didn't like this season and so you didn't like the series, I think you're cutting yourself short.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show's incredibly important and it just hits on so many things that I like. And as a fan who did walk away from the show and came back to it, I'm so pleased that it turned out as wonderfully as it did. And in a lot of ways, even though like my most favorite character died, all of the characters that I was really, really invested in got a happy ending. Even if it wasn't, they got married and had children and drove off into the sunset. Like they all kind of got what they needed as they were introduced in the first season. So for me, for this list, there was no other choice. It was the one of the only things that I watched the day it came out, week to week. And I'm sad that we're not getting any more Game of Thrones. I know there are other shows in development, but it won't be the same.
No.
And so I'm sad that the show's over. So I wanted to talk about Game of Thrones again. So that's my favorite show of the year.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure I know what yours is, Jason.
Well, my best show of 2019 is also an HBO show, and that is the one that I never thought I would have put on this list. At the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
it's Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
It is Watchmen without any... It's far and away Watchmen.
You and President Obama.
he's with me. Just in case you don't know what the show is about, it's based on the celebrated graphic novel by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. The series takes place in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 34 years after the original story. After a white supremacist attack on the local police department, which leaves only two surviving cops in the beat, laws are passed that allow the cops to hide their identities behind masks. One of these cops, Angela Abar, adopts the identity of Sister Knight and fights racists while dealing with the decades-long legacy of vigilantes. This was basically Damon Lindelof's risky but insanely satisfying attempt to remix the comic masterpiece by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. And to be honest with you, Damon Lindelof has been taking a lot of risks since Lost. The mm-hmm. Leftovers was amazing. And again, you can like or hate Damon Lindelof, but the thing that Damon Lindelof does is he pushes television forward every time he does it because he never plays it safe. There is an episode in this season called This Extraordinary Being. It's episode 6, and it literally gives you kind of the story of like kind of a black man walking through 1930s to 1950s America and how he deals with it. And it is one of the best episodes of television I've ever seen. Now, I know a lot of people are like, well, but Damon Lindelof's a white guy. I understand that. Damon Lindelof has been doing a lot of press behind the series, and this series is very much about race. And he's revealed that more of his writer's room was diverse than it wasn't. He had more women than he had men.
But see, that shows that you know, he's obviously a white guy who enjoys a certain level of privilege, and he's used his powers for good.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why I want to make sure that's out, because, again, the thing that's amazing about this is that the Watchmen comic book dealt with the most prevalent issue of the age, and that was the Cold War. And if you were to talk about what is the most prevalent issue of 2019, I think the race relations in America and their relationship to police might be the biggest issue. And nothing in the show was spoon fed, and nothing. I think you can watch the show without having read the original Watchmen comic, and you still get it's satisfying. And it's so interesting because it was just extraordinary. It was the most challenging and yet satisfying and yet so emotionally real. Angela Abar, played by Regina King, I think is one of the most realistic women I've seen on television in a long, long time.
Casting carryover from The Leftovers.
Yes, yes. But her character is so real. And again, it's one of these things where you can go over to our good friends, the Fanbrace Press. I was on their Watchmen episode where we talked 2 hours about the entire series. Mm-hmm. So I'll go more in depth in there if you want to check it out.
We also talked a lot about the original book on our Watchmen Book Club episode.
It's just insanely satisfying. I would say even if you don't like Watchmen, you need to check out this show. Like I said, that Joker was going to define the next 10 years of superhero comic book movies. Watchmen is going to define the next 10 years of superhero television.
It's funny.
I have no doubt about that.
I think Watchmen is the one that has most picked up the baton from Game of Thrones, even though it's still genre, but it's very different. Like, they're very antithetical to each other. And I think a lot of people expected His Dark Materials to do that. Now, I haven't seen it, so can't speak to
it's
it.
It's funny. The reviews on Dark Materials are mixed.
I think we'll probably like it.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet.
I think Watchmen is really the one in the HBO camp.
Yes.
That's going to pull away.
And that's the other thing. Damon Lindelof built this as a one season show. It's definitely getting a season 2.
It was never going to happen.
It's every point that this show could have done the most predictable thing, it didn't.
Can I ask you, who is your favorite of the new cast of characters? Because I know there's some new ones and some old ones.
I can't say without giving away a spoiler.
Okay.
I can't say.
Okay, that's fine.
All I will say is that, oh man, what is his name? He's the gentleman that played Black Manta. He plays Cal. Mm-hmm. He plays Angela's husband. His name is very difficult to say, and that's why I don't know it off the top of my head, which I apologize.
But Yahya Abdul Mateen II.
Yes.
I'm sure I pronounced that wrong. I apologize. It's me doing my best.
He is fantastic.
He's very handsome.
And
too.
I think he's somebody to watch. He is Cal. He's Angela's. He has a scene where he describes what death is to children. And I kind of think a lot of parents should use that explanation.
I've heard you talk about that, actually.
It's pretty great. If you have not seen Watchmen, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. It is far and away no other television show. Every other television show in 2019 is about 5 miles behind Watchmen. Watchmen is that far. Watchmen is Carol Shelby, the lead. A reference back to
Four
Free
Four. Back there, friends.
It's no other television show came close. That's how transformative and amazing Watchmen is. And I will say this. It's the one show that I heard everybody talk about on Monday.
Mm.
And it was one of those things where, like, every time I went to work and I hadn't seen it, I was like, oh, it's going to be rough because everybody wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, but you're also in an environment where people like to talk about television.
Well, and I'm very thankful for that job.
Yes.
Ashley, what are some honorable mentions that made it up there?
I almost put this as my choice, but we have not finished it yet, so I didn't think that was fair. I think The Crown Season 3 is unfathomably good.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize to any of our UK listeners who are really into the royals. I think modern royals are dumb and should be done away with. And Jason keeps pointing out that they take these characters who we are not particularly invested in, and
they're terrible people.
They really make. I'm sorry, Prince Harry. I know you're listening.
Yeah, hey, buddy.
You and Meghan come on the show anytime.
Yeah, sure. We'll talk about Fringe. She was on Fringe, everybody. I was telling the listeners.
I know she was. Yep, she sure. Oh boy. Anyway, they take these characters that I'm not particularly interested in at face value and manage to make real drama.
Yep.
Out of them.
The Crown Season 3 is in my honorable mention.
It's
as well.
Really just sharp.
Any other ones?
Top television. Doom Patrol.
Oh, I forgot
think
about Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol yeah. is so good, and Doom Patrol should be stupid. Embraces the stupid and is still really thoughtful, really emotional, and good superhero TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then something that Jason doesn't care about at all. This year, RuPaul's Drag Race started Drag Race UK, and I thought it was weird and delightful and a refreshing spin on a reality TV show that I can see the formula of a mile away. I thought it was wonderful.
Well, just because of that, you know what? Rust Valley Restorers.
You can
add,
yeah.
was a great television show on
good
Netflix.
Canadian content.
Great
right
Canadian
there.
Content. One show I think you forgot, Better Call Saul, had its fourth season.
Was that this year?
Yes, it was.
Oh, boy.
At the beginning of this year, it was astoundingly great. I do agree with you, Crown Season 3. Mm. Another show that came out this year that was amazing, What We Do in the Shadows.
So good.
And then I would be remiss to not mention The Good Place,
mm-hmm.
which literally made me cry this year.
Mm-hmm.
And also another HBO show, Barry. Barry had its second season this year, which was very, very good.
Yeah, we're definitely in a golden age of television as this year illustrates.
It's so good. But yeah, I agree with you. Crown Season 3 almost took my number one. Like
it almost took
my number one. But again, we haven't finished it. So, all right, now it's time to talk about books with mostly pictures, Ashley.
With mostly pictures.
Yeah, because some of these.
You mean with mostly words?
Well, mostly words. Yes.
Yeah,
that's correct.
For me,
I use the words real good here.
Yeah, you did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Me speak real well, much better.
Aren't you supposed to be a professional writer?
That's what spell check's for, baby.
This is not a book that came out this year. And this is a book that my mom sent me her copy of. So it already came all jacked up and spine was broken. And that is the...
That means it's good.
It just hurts me on the inside. It is The State of Wonder by Anne Pratchett. Anne Pratchett is most famous for writing Bel Canto and The Magician's Assistant. Her books are consistently on things like the London Times, 1001 Books to Read Before You Die. She's a New York Times bestseller, award winner, all of that. State of Wonder features a doctor from Minnesota who gets sent to the Amazon rainforest to collect the body of her colleague who was doing research there, and then she died.
Is it fictional?
It is fictional.
Okay,
it's
okay,
a novel.
Okay, I was just very uncertain.
Yes. No. And she doesn't want to be there. She's not into it. And over the course of the time that she spends there, how it changes her perspective on how she is leading her life, how it changes her perspective on the world and on the way that people live. It's hard to describe it and make it sound urgent and make it sound really active, but it is. It's a novel in the truest sense. You live inside this woman's head. You learn a lot about that part of the world and the way that native tribes and native medicine work. And I just thought it was the most wonderful thing I read. I got wrapped up in it. I was like reading. I took it and read it on the bus. I brought it everywhere with me so that I could finish it. And I spend a lot of time reading a lot of things that some people would consider pulp. And this is at the opposite end of that, right? Like this is the one that critics love to hold up. And it's nice to be able to experience both and see the value in both. And I thought State of Wonder was really special. And I think that our listeners would really, really be into it.
So, cool.
State of Wonder by Anne Pratchett. Very, very excellent book. What is your prose book for the year?
Well, actually, I think there is a prose book that stands high above the rest, very high above the rest. And I think that is a book called Super Soldiers by this author known as Jason Inman.
Hey,
that was published in 2019 in June. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to promote my own book that came out this year. But you should go check it out on Amazon. Just saying there. No, actually,
buy it from your website. Get a signed version.
That's correct.
That's a better way to do it.
JasonInman.com. No, actually, I think this might be a first. My number one book of this year actually did come out this year.
Nice.
Came out in February 2019. It's Wild Bill, The True Story of the American Frontier's First Gunfighter. Now, this is by Tom Clavin. And the synopsis is, in July of 1865, Wild Bill Hickok shot and killed Davis Tutt in Springfield, Missouri, the first quick draw duel on the frontier, and thus began the reputation that made him a marked man to every gunslinger in the Wild West. Now, I started reading this book as a research for another script that I was reading that involves a cowboy, and I quickly kind of fell in love with Wild Bill Hickok, who I knew some stuff from because I'd mm-hmm. watched Deadwood, the television show. But I didn't know that much about him. And I also didn't know that much that he spent a lot of time in Kansas. He spends a lot of time in Kansas. And so there's a lot of interesting things about how he meets Calamity Jane and how he meets Buffalo Bill Cody and all this kind of stuff like that. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know how much you know about Wild Bill Hickok, but he's considered to be like the model for every gunslinging cowboy you see in movies. Apparently, he supposedly killed 100 men in duels.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and because you think about the odds of that. Mm-hmm. Like, the odds that this guy did 100 quick draw duels and won them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why the sad thing comes is when you find out how he died. Well, he was shot in the back at a poker game.
Mm.
There you go. That it was just fascinating to me. I that's why I like reading nonfiction a lot of times, because I think sometimes, and most of the times, fact is stranger than fiction. So that's my book, Wild Bill, the true story of the American frontiers. First gunfighter. Do you have any honorable mentions?
Yes, a book that actually did come out in February of this year is Comics Will Break Your Heart by Faith Erin Hicks. It is a book that I was bullied into reading by Steven Schleicher, who kept saying, it's so good, you should read it, you'll really, really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a bunch of Faith Erin Hicks. She's a Canadian cartoonist and writer. I have a bunch of her comic books that I've always thought she was really great. I think she's an Eisner winner. And this is her first prose foray. And it is set in Atlantic Canada, which is where my family is from. It's where my mother lives. And culminates in a trip to San Diego Comic-Con. And it kind of explores a relationship between a Jack Kirby and a Stan Lee-like figure. And the grandchildren of those figures and how they fall in love. It's really cute. It's really well written. I read it in 2 days. I thought it was really wonderful. And then I also really enjoyed High Magic by Damien Echols. Damien Echols is a really prominent figure in the West Memphis 3 true crime case. I think he's a very, very interesting man. And this was his first book after he wrote his memoirs about his time, about his exploration of spirituality and philosophy. And I thought it was really, really cool. Do you have any also, Rance?
The Topeka School, which I don't forget the author, but it was on former President Obama's list of the top 100. And then also Wanderers by Chuck Wendig.
Nice. So
there you go. All right, let's go into podcasts that are not ours. Ashley, what did you think was the best podcast of 2019?
For me, this is a pretty new podcast app to my rotation, but I wanted to mention the A24 podcast. Mm-hmm. A24 is a production company. They make really cool movies like Midsommar and The Farewell and Eighth Grade and Hereditary and Lady Bird and Moonlight and The Witch and all of those, all of the, when you think of cool, quote unquote, edgy films. A24 is at the forefront of that right now. And all of their podcast episodes are conversations between creatives who work on their movies. And they try to put them around a theme. So they had Robert Eggers and Ari Aster, who did The Lighthouse and Midsommar, specifically talking about Ingmar Bergman and how that inspires their work. I think it's a really interesting conceit for a podcast. I wish they would come out more regularly. They do not have a regular release schedule. But if you are a film nerd or you want to work in any capacity in that industry, I think it's really, really worth a listen. And there's only about 12 episodes so far, so it's really easy to catch up on.
Nice.
How about you, Jason?
Mine is Far and Away. This was the year I discovered Blank Check by Griffin and David, hosted by Griffin Newman and David Sims. It's where they talk about directors that have a significant success and then are offered a figurative blank check to pursue their passion projects. Most episodes focus on a single movie from a director's filmography. It's very crazy. David Sims is a film critic, and Griffin Newman, you best know him as the Arthur from The Tick.
I think you mean that trivia host from Crisis on Infinite Earths.
I mean, I guess, but he's more famous in other roles. But, you know, it's a very fun podcast. It's a very interesting podcast. And it's a podcast kind of like ours, where you can kind of jump around and do all, just listen to the episodes that you want to listen to. They also covered Miyazaki this year, which was very interesting.
So did we.
Mm-hmm. My honorable mentions for this is there's a very fascinating NPR podcast called It Could Happen Here, which is about a fictional third American Civil War, or second, excuse me, not third. The second one was secret. It was in the 40s.
You know, there's definitely an argument to be made about whether or not there's been a second Civil War, but not for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
My also rans were one that I was put onto by Jason called The Newsworthy by Erica Mandy. It is a 10-minute podcast that comes out every weekday and kind of goes over the major headlines. And I think she's great and curates a really, really great show. Mm-hmm. And it makes me feel more informed than I am and gives me a lot of, their show notes are very extensive, so you can do a lot of your own research, which I think is cool. The Dream, which is about multi-level marketing and conspiracy theories. And then The Last Days of August, it was originally called The Butterfly Effect. And if you have tiny children, skip forward like 2 minutes. It examines the adult entertainment industry and how the digital world changed that.
What's the name of this podcast again?
The first season is called The Butterfly Effect. Okay. And then the second season is called The Last Days of August.
Because but do you find it under The Butterfly Effect?
You can find it under either.
Oh, okay.
And The Last Days of August, the second season, explores the death of an American adult actress and what in the industry led up to that. Hmm. And it was a very, very well-researched, very insightful, very psychologically frightening look at that form of entertainment through a lens that I thought was very, very respectful and very down to earth. And I just thought it was so cool. So I wanted to shout it
out. Nice. Cool. Yeah. I didn't think there was anything for anybody to skip forward on that.
Well, I don't know what people's respective feelings are about adult entertainment.
All right. So. Now comes to the most self-indulgent section of the best of 2019. What we thought was the best geek history lesson mm-hmm. released in 2019. Now, we don't do this because we love ourselves. We do this actually because a student of the Mayan University suggested we do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Ashley, mm-hmm. it's time to get pull out the report cards and give ourselves an evaluation. Mm-hmm. What did you think was the best episode of our podcast in 2019?
Well, this was a really easy choice for me because there's an episode that we released in 2019 about my favorite person in the world, and that's episode 242, Jason Inman. So that was my...
Was that this year?
This February, yeah.
Oh, man. I forgot about that episode.
Yeah. Also, I'm not on that one, so it's not self-indulgent to say that I like that one the best.
That was a really good one.
It is a really good one.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
It's one of the only ones I got to listen to and be like, oh, I'm enjoying this.
I might change my answer now.
You're allowed to.
My wonderful mother. Yeah, it was to celebrate our five-year anniversary. Yeah.
Shout out to Bernadette. She's great.
Yeah, she was great. That was a great episode.
Yeah.
Well, my not as good choice, actually was the Watchmen book club episode. I didn't write down the number because I'm bad. But we had, we had Matthew Peterson on and we went into Watchmen, the Watchmen 12 issue miniseries. And to be honest with you, I thought it was so good because I know you don't like the book.
I tried to bail on it for literally 3 weeks.
I'm in the middle of it and Matthew loves it, but I thought the podcast was so good because we could have recorded 3 hours of that podcast. Mm-hmm. We only recorded an hour, but it was that good. The conversation was so compelling and it actually made me appreciate and kind of enjoy the book a little bit more than I had from just reading it. So
nice.
But that's my honorable mentions. If I want to throw another one out here, I thought Kiki's delivery service episode was one of the best ones.
I think our Howlsman Castle episode is really good.
Yeah, because
the progenitor of John Wick, yes.
Yes, I was going to say like one of those, I think it's Howlsman Castle is the one that kicked off the hashtag bonanza of the of 2019 where we're watching all these weird movies. So.
I also, the first one that we released of 2019 was Young Justice, and I just had a lot of fun teaching that one.
Mm-hmm.
So that one always comes to mind for me.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it. Ashley, they can find a bunch of this stuff. Bunch of our choices, they can purchase them. Mm-hmm. Where can they do that?
You can purchase many of these choices if you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. We have really easy widgets. You click on them, you buy them in your preferred form of consumption, and a little bit of support comes back our way at no additional cost to you. Make Amazon pay us.
All right, now we're going to be going into the honor roll, which is the last section of the podcast where Ashley will be reading some of you. You guys, if you go over to Apple Podcasts and you leave us a 5-star review, you can write whatever you want. And not only do you help us in the search algorithm of iTunes, but we read your 5-star review on the air. Ashley.
Well, hang on, Jason. If they're international.
Oh, yeah.
How do they want to be included?
Well, if they're international, because we can't read that. You obviously have to take a screenshot and then you have to email that at geekhistorylesson@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're looking at anybody, especially we're looking. I want to see somebody from Mexico.
I mean, I'm still looking for Kazakhstan. So yep. Let
mm-hmm,
us know.
Mm-hmm.
So the first person joining the honor roll today is Webslinger0498, who says, "Noise. I love listening to GHL. It's great to hear other people's thoughts on comics. It brings a lot of things to light that I've missed over the years. And they recommend some pretty great books. Thanks, guys. Noise." Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. They are also joined by Crummy81, who says, "Making a comeback. Grew up reading a lot when I was a kid, but missed a lot because of availability in the area I grew up in. But thank you to this podcast for helping me get reconnected to the stories and the characters I love and learning way more than I ever knew. And the recommended reading helps so much. Can't wait each week for the new episodes. Keep up the awesome job." And then rounding out our list of honorees this week is Malhana, who says, best podcast ever. Listening to you guys has changed my opinion of so many characters, constructs, and team-ups. I love listening to this podcast. They really pack so much information into one podcast. Great job! All in caps. I'm DC all the way, but never read any comic books until you guys. I love Ashley's laugh and Jason's skits. Aw.
Right.
I listen to all the DC podcasts and am finishing up the last few Marvel podcasts. Enjoy every minute and never mind when you guys go over your time. I told you they didn't mind, and they included a little
when we go over the time
emoji. Yeah,
no, they care. They care. They got a stopwatch.
So thank you to Malhana, Crummy 81, and Webslinger 0498. Welcome to the Teacher's Lounge, Jason. What is waiting for them today?
Inside, Mr. Riley has a sculpture waiting for them. They can look at, but they can't touch.
What is the sculpture of?
St. Augustine.
I thought you were maybe going to go E.T.
Nope.
For Mr. Riley.
No. It was a different Mr. Riley.
Okay.
So don't forget to subscribe to us on, of course, all of the places you can listen to podcasts. That is Spotify. That is Stitcher. That is Apple Podcasts. And don't forget that you can suggest future lessons. Where, Ashley?
You can do that at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, at Twitter at GHL Podcast, or geekhistorylesson.com. There's a bunch of ways to contact us in all of those places.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. Follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And now, you know what? I think to start off the new year, let's not do a hashtag stick around. Let's just say goodbye to the listeners. Let's,
I have a question for you and everything.
Oh, you do?
We do.
Okay, listeners, we're doing hashtag stick around. Here we go. Ashley, let's rock and roll. What is it?
Jason, who's the best kitty of 2019?
What? What is this? The best kitty of 2019?
Honestly, my hope was that Intern Brago would be in the room. And
he's
for
not.
One season.
He's not in the room. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, I love Intern Brago, but we might have to give a tip for a hat to old Grumpy Cat,
who
we lost this year, and Lil Bub,
who we also
lost this year.
Yeah.
So, Intern Brago, you're young. You got plenty of time to win this.
It's got to start him an Instagram account so we can take over.
You're young. You got plenty of years to win this award, but you don't win it in 2019. Buck up, son. Okay.
Hope you like our skits.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Geek History Lesson in 2019. And thank you so much for listening to us in the 2020s and further on. Happy New Year to you all. And I guess we can still say happy holidays. Let's just say it.
Happy everything.
Happy holidays. Happy day. Happy week to you all. We really appreciate you guys listening to us. And, we're excited to keep podcasting with you. So I am Jason. So excited, Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class for the last time?
Class is dismissed. And I don't want to see you till the new year.